B from San Diego.
Doug, alcoholic. I'm sober today by the grace of God. Any success I may be having is far greater his than mine. And, thank you, Louie. That was a great 10-minute speak right there. I mean, some seating right up front. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Doug. Welcome. So early on, I had a lot of the same problems. I didn't feel like I fit in, and instantly the obsession kicked in after I took some of my dad's Olympia. This was a long time ago, but that was the beer that Dad had all the time. And I'd come home from work or come home from school, and if he was home from work, the house smelled like cigarettes and beer already. And I liked the beer smell, and the cigarettes I didn't like so much. But every time he turned his back, I could go ahead and, sip some Olympia Talls. And, I didn't learn that I was an alcoholic. And had the allergy and the obsession and all that stuff until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. I think I learned that in the College of 1111 Island. It was the detox, and there was some professors that came in there, and they were they called themselves a panel. And they did. They told me one of the things that I could relate to right away, and it was that that once I started drinking, I couldn't stop. And I did not stick solely to alcohol, nor did Bill Wilson or Bob or any of them. When I mixed anything with alcohol, that was what landed me on the rocks too. I read that in that big book. But alcoholism is my problem. It still is today. It was March 22nd of 2002, and I had got to this point where the bitter morass and self-pity, quicksand stretched in all directions was a great description that I read out of the big book. But I was actually in that, and on March 22nd, 2002. And I was going to kill myself in this dumpster. And I remember I was asking God for help, and thank you. My wife's here, though, so... Lisa. I asked God for help, and I was a red hot mess, man. It was awful. I couldn't live with it. I couldn't live without it. I didn't know how to, he spoke about being a salesperson and having that ability to hustle and use people until you got what you wanted, and then you'd run. And I wouldn't run for so quick. I mean, I like to stay there and re-trample them. I would get everything out of them that I could. But when I got to that point where, I couldn't live with it and I couldn't live without it, I was at this point of a desperation that I have these stairs in my house that they come down. It's like a little landing in the middle, and then they switch back and they go down some more stairs, And for some reason, I just crumbled right there, and I asked God for help, and I was crying, and, all that misery and slobber and stuff that comes with it, and it was awful. And, I got that way out in public also, but it was that time it was I wasn't trying to squeeze anybody for anything. There was nobody there that I was, trying to get any pity out of or anything. But I cried out to God for help, and I said, "God, please help me," you know. And I was crying. I was on my knees, and He didn't. I thought, He did not. He was not there. He didn't show up. Didn't have the robe on. There was no glow. There was nothing happening. All that pain was still there. And I went ahead and decided, well, I'm going to just go ahead and finish packing up all this stuff that I had at the house and throw it all away and in this dumpster. And I did. And I'd say a half hour or something had gone by, and this friend of mine showed up in this back alley. And I was up in this dumpster, and I had this great big buck knife. I'm not promoting buck knives or anything, but they're pretty sick. And this one was really big, and it would have done the job, clean through. And that's what I felt like. I loved alcohol. I loved all the combinations of alcohol and, all the favors that I did also. It was, I loved that stuff. There was nothing like the effect, that I got from alcohol. There never was. And, but anyways, that night, so I'm in that dumpster, and this God did help me. He sent me an alcoholic. It's just, I just found out tonight it was Larry's bunkie at the Freedom Ranch multiple years ago. So not to break his anonymity, his name's Jeremy Ryder. And he bunked with Larry many years ago at the Freedom Ranch. And, this guy was not somebody that I was looking up to for help or any inspiration, stuff like that. Matter of fact, he was one of my road dogs many years ago. And we were doing crime, and we were doing dope and drinking, and my wife and him drank my collector's Jack Daniel's bottle that I had saved, and they replaced it with like tea. Yeah. That's my buddy. And the people that we associate, and it says that we seek lower companionship and stuff like that. And I did that to the fullest, and to where I became the lowest of the lower companions in that relationship, and all my friendships and my family. I'm there that night, and here comes Jeremy up this dark alley, and I'm in this dumpster, and the timing was impeccable, man. It really was. I can't really describe to you. Well, I'm going to try. That timing, because I was just ready to kill myself, it took a long time. It took 22 years to get to that point. And so it was a matter of like 1 minute or so, he talks about God's grace so many times in all of these steps and in that book and all the stories that I've heard over the years. I can only do this in retrospect, look at like that moment and what he had to offer, and it wasn't anything super spectacular, like here's the winning lottery ticket, here's a new truck, here's enough for an eight ball, or another 3 day binge on booze. It's nothing like that. He's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm gonna check out." That's where I was at. I'm like, "I was gonna check out," and he said, "Well, why don't we just check in?" And, a lot of people know that I'm deaf in one ear, you know, and they like to make fun of me and, you know, all that stuff. That's great. But for a, for one second, you know, that split second, in that split moment at that time in that dumpster 12 years ago, I heard something for the first time in my life that I've learned since then. I've heard several times, but I never heard. Like people said to me, but I never heard. You know, and it was a, there was a solution, and it was just finally that level of desperation had set in to the point where I was willing to actually hear what he had to say, and it was 11-11 Island. He's like, let's check in, and I'm like, okay, you know, what does that mean, you know, and he took me down there, you know, and he got me boxes of Mike and Ike's and Marlboro Reds and chocolate, and you know, he always kept coming down there and you know, showing his support. And you know, I don't know, well, I do know I help a lot of guys. I like to think I help a lot of guys, you know, with the steps and you know, some of the messages that I can carry to them. But you know, one of the things that I found most in AA was early on, when that obsession was removed, that I immediately got into action. And so I didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't the door greeter, and somebody at a meeting didn't say, "Hey, you be the door greeter and you hand out a ticket and you sell the CDs and, you know, you lead the meeting, you do run the speaker or the speaker tapes or whatever." I started helping out with guys that, like, split their head open and were vomiting on the floor in the detox. And, you know, I'd been up for, Larry likes to say, like, 4 years or something. I was only maybe a month or something like that for me, or, you know, a couple weeks. But I had a little bit of extra energy in that detox, and so I got into it right away. I started helping out and scrubbing those mats, and they stunk, man, and it was a horrible scenario, but I got into it, and I didn't know at that time, but I was already of service. I'd done step one, you know. I got myself to the point where I asked God for help, you know. My life was unmanageable, and I definitely proved that I was powerless over alcohol and people and relationships. These guys in these panels, they came in there and they just told me, like, this is what we do. They would read, you know, chapter 5, how it works, and explain, like, why they were there. And, you know, maybe sometimes they'd mention where they came from or whatever, and that there was a whole host of other people that had my problem. And I'm like, you know, my problem. Mine is, you guys really don't understand. And I come to find out that they did. They knew exactly what I was talking about. They showed me a book that was written about me, 1935-39. So all I had to do was be willing to believe what was written in there. So these guys that I try and help, and I hear other people, if you're not to the point of desperation, you know, sometimes the steps just don't work for you. But I wouldn't say don't try it, you know. So if you keep coming back, maybe you can get to the page where it says to try it. It says to, if you're not sure, you know, it's worth a... go out and try some controlled drinking. Try it more than once, you know, to get a knowledge of your condition. I didn't have to do that. I haven't had to do that. I try and stay busy, and there's something about getting phone calls in the middle of the night. You know, sometimes it's disruptive, and sometimes, like, why are you going at 3 o'clock in the morning to answer phones, you know, or whatever. And I don't want to drink again. And it's not that I don't want to drink again. It's I don't want the misery and that uncontrollable obsession to kick in again. I love drinking. it worked for me all the time. I loved it, you know. But what was I going to do after that drink? Was I going to stop? Was I going to be a dad again? Was I going to be able to, hold down a job, pay any bills? I had 22 years experience that says no. No, that's not going to happen. I put my wife through hell, and she wasn't my wife at the time. We had really young kids. They were 2 and 3 years old. And I couldn't stop, I could not stop. And you would think with those kids, that scenario, that I would be able to, put the plug in the jug, be the working dad, go to and from school, with the kids and, all that stuff. And it was every chance that I had to get away. I couldn't not drink. And I guess that's still scary for me today. It really is. If it wasn't, Larry would have called and said, I don't really need to be of service. I don't need to go do that, I don't know who had more influence there, but you guys are... Anyways. So I walked over there a little while ago at that break, and one of the first CDs I saw had my name on it, and I spoke here like 3.5 years ago. And a lot has happened between then and now, a lot. And on page 92 of the 12 and 12, I like to say that when I open up too, I'm sober today by the grace of God, and any success I may have is far greater His than mine. When I start thinking that I'm in control of this and that look at me, look at what I've done, and that's why I'm sober. I need to check myself, against big shotism. God takes care of me as I try and do His work. There's nothing that I can do on my own. I'm drunk. I'm in a dumpster. Everybody is tired of me. I haven't really gotten into any of the all my felonies and stuff like that. It was, I don't need to go into that every time, but, some of you guys in here know my story right there. It's a long, painful past. Welcome to the newcomers. There was a lot of you newcomers. I spoke to Peter back there, and Arizona has got some drunks out there. That's good. I got a sister that lives in Chandler now, and I go out there to this, to the family function now for Thanksgiving, and when I get there though, I get on the AA online. I'm no good at it, but I had a little bit of help, and I look up a meeting there, and it was, I was hooked up right there. And that's like, I have a little group that I go to now when I go out there, so that's awesome. Everywhere I go, there's meetings, there's a chance to be of service. If I don't stay, in the moment, if I don't keep doing what I've been doing, the only things that I've been taught here, I don't know how long it would be. Like some people say, don't overdo it. You may be doing too much, or you're not doing enough, or like, I don't see you at this meeting, so you don't have a chance, or whatever. I don't know what the ingredients are. All the ones that I've been putting into the same batch of cookies, I'm just gonna keep trying that because it seems to be working. I have some really good meetings that I go to. I wish that I was like a professional anything, really. No. No. I know I've heard some circuit speakers, and my first grand sponsor was Peter F. And he taught me a lot about being of service early on. I could never hold a candle to that guy. But what I do is I try and reach out my hand. You know, there's a pamphlet that we have here. I don't know if we have one of the pamphlets. Whenever anybody anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to always be there, and for that I am responsible. And you know, that's one of my favorite readings right there. If I was to tell you that I didn't believe in God, if I believed in something like a group, for a higher power. I wouldn't be telling you the truth. And so, I do feel it necessary to talk about this, is that every time we read chapter 5, it says there is one who has all power, and that one is God, and may you find him now. And those words are all capitalized for a reason. It took me a long time to come to terms with that. And it doesn't matter what your understanding is or what my understanding is. It matters what... that I believe in my understanding of God. If I don't, then why would I go ahead and turn my will and my life over to Him? Why would I do that if I didn't have an understanding? When I take a guy through the steps, I don't tell him like he has to have my God. I don't claim that there's one God. I just tell him that when I did it, this is what I did, And then I came to believe even further by taking the step. So let's get through that step, and we'll go to the next one. And, it works out if you're willing. If you're willing to have an open mind, that there's a God that'll solve your problems, you have a chance to stay sober. If you don't, I've heard a lot of painful stories. I've been to a lot of funerals. This is, I heard Louis say, this is a, underneath there's a deadly earnestness. And there is, man. It's, this was the last option, I guess, for me. I wasn't going to hear it. I wasn't going to do anything like this until I cried out for help. And this is kind of where I was sent. The guys I work with now, I don't tell them, hey, you have to call me every day. You don't. You really don't. But I just hope that when something's happening to where you do need to call somebody, that you do. We suffer from a pride, unwillingness to pick up the phone and ask for help. It took me forever to ask another man for help. I thought that I could do this on my own forever. And I found out that I couldn't. It almost killed me. I thank God that I actually, got into that detox. And then heard from a panel what to do. Because if that wasn't explained to me, I would have left that facility right there and still had no solution. Today, what it's like for me is I'm able to hold down a job. I have six kids and four grandkids, Lisa is my wife now. We ended up getting married after we both were sober, for a long time. So, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I have no control over that kind of stuff. I'm able to coach Little League baseball, soccer. I can be a friend to a friend, dad to my kids, husband to my wife. I don't know that that's what I was after when I got here. I knew that a lot of the times when I was out there walking the streets that I was like, you know, how can this guy have this and not me? You know, I was always comparing my insides to others' outsides. And I heard somebody else say this, that, you know, I just never measured up. You know, I just never measured up. And I didn't have a solution. I didn't have a plan. And what was I going to do? You know, once I learned, you know, how to practice these principles, that, you know, I started to understand that I have a purpose, you know, now. I really do. If I was to go, my mom's house right now and make amends to her, the living amends, you know, that I owe her, you know, she could let me off easy. She could tell me, you know, it's okay. And those are some of the, I mean, I don't know. I think I need to hear the truth. I think that I need to hear, like, the pain that I caused. It went on for years. I need to hear these things. I need to be able to face up to them. I'm going through the steps again, and I got some new people on my list. Let me rephrase that. I got some old people on the list that I wasn't willing to put on there a long time ago. And you know, so it's just it's a new level. It's a new level of progress for me. Still surrounded with, you know, fear. Sometimes I don't want to do something that's going to, like, take away from the money that I'm making. You know, I don't like paying taxes. I heard somebody laugh. You don't either. I do not like, yeah, I really don't. And, you know, it's hard for me to part with money. It's much easier for me to give up my time and, you know, resources and stuff like that. If I can help you do something physically or whatever, that's not as much of a problem as it is, like parting with money. And, you know, there's an underlying factor to that. I'm learning more and more. You know, I wish I had all the answers, but I don't. Newcomers, I say the newcomers are the most important people in the rooms. If you do what we do, you'll get what we get. And so you kind of got to watch, you know, who you do or who. Not come out. Well, there's that story, too. You do got to watch who you do around here. It's monkey see, monkey do, you know, but follow the right monkey. You know, or monkeys. The one year cake, Kyle. Yeah, I see him at another meeting, and that was really good. You know, you got a tight bunch of friends, and you have fun in this program, and you know, that is a big deal. You know, there's. There was times where I thought, you know, I was never going to have, like, the type of fun that I thought that I needed to have in order to be okay. You know, I'm an extremist, man. I'm an alcoholic to the max, you know. I suffer from alcoholism. I go every year to Magic Mountain, and it's like the first ride that I got to go on is the X2. And it's just like it rattles my brain. It rattles my body. It's super exciting. It flips you, twists you. It's hauling ass. It's super high. It's crazy. And I'm like, yeah. And then at this time that I go, there's not really any lines, so I can go right back, and I can go again. You know, like more, you know. And I think the actual reason why they have the lines so long is so you don't die in between. It's pretty crazy. I just like that, you know. I'm 12 years sober, but I'll still take things to the extreme all the time, you know. Shows, food, like food's a big deal, you know. Sex, you know. We go to the extremes with these things. So alcohol's not my problem right now, you know, but I suffer from alcoholism. So I'm restless, irritable, and discontent without a drink. And then these things right here and the fellowship that I hang out with, you know, they keep me grounded right there. I can get pretty way out pretty quick. You know, I heard, you know, one of my buddies that we have a lot in common talking about, you know, some driving incidents just today. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, I can relate, you know. I went up to my daughter's volleyball tournament up in Carlsbad today. So in between here and there, there was, I don't know, 40, 50 a-holes out there on the street that didn't drive the way I wanted. And I was obviously not doing what they wanted. You know, and these types of things happen, and I can get carried away. And, you know, we have on-the-spot checks. You know, little prayers that, you know, can get us through things like that. You know, I haven't had any super serious problems in a long time. You know, I used to go to jail all the time. Not so much jail. I mean, I went to jail a few times, and then they just started sending me right to prison. Just kind of bypass it, like, no, you go here, you know. And I was okay with that, too, you know. It made me, you know, I kind of thought, like, that was the hand that was dealt to me, and so, you know, I was going to play it to the best of my ability. And, you know, that was bad. But, you know, today I haven't had a problem like that in a long time. I could have been in a lot of trouble for some of the things I've done in sobriety. And, you know, maybe spiritually I still am in a lot of trouble for some of the things I've done in sobriety, you know, and think about that. Meditate on that. Some of the things that you've done in sobriety, you know. The progress and not perfection thing, that really matters around here. Once somebody tries to say, hey, you have to be all of this or you're not welcome around here, like, we're done. I'm going to be standing here holding up this podium right here, and you guys aren't going to be here, and I'm going to be talking to myself like I used to, you know. there's something to be said about this program that, you know, I hear it just expressed in gratitude. For me, it's like it's a design for living that was written for me before I was born. And like, who would have thought? I had no idea that I never aspired for this. I've heard that, you know. What I did want to do is I wanted to have the most fun that I could with the least amount of responsibility. And I didn't want anybody to tell me that I couldn't do what I wanted to do. You know, so I didn't fit in with society. So, what I'm doing today is basically, I get up in the morning and, I sit up if I'm not too late. I do my prayer right there, and I'm looking out my bedroom window, and the sun's coming up, and I just do a little prayer, and, I especially ask for those that are less fortunate than myself, and that I can just kind of stay out of my own way today, and just help me make decisions that are based, on my usefulness to somebody else. I have some selfish prayers, and I'll just keep those to myself right now. But, there's some things that I want for myself that, that I talk to God about. And that's okay, man. If you have a relationship with God, and you can talk to Him, like a friend or like your father, He is your father. If you can do that, it's just going to grow. Your relationship with Him is going to grow. I've heard several stories where people stop. I mean, they do these things, they get these results, and then they stop doing these things, and something else happens. I don't want that to happen. I don't want that for anybody. If you're in here, maybe you're just a DUI court slip, whatever. But you gotta believe me when I say, if there was another way without doing this, I don't think I'd be doing this. But there isn't another way. There isn't. I totally believe that. I'm an alcoholic to the extreme. I stayed out there for 22 years. I didn't come in here. When the judge told me to go to, he never sent me like specifically AA. It was like a prop something, 3100 or, okay, great. Yeah. Whatever it was, I wasn't going anyways. As soon as I left, the courtroom, I what I was doing. I wasn't going here. I was going back out to try it, some other way other than, what everybody else had to say. So, thanks, you just told me. 10 minutes. God. Just never happened to anybody else. So when the judge would tell me to go to some place like this, I just wouldn't do it. I got here after 22 years of trying it my way. And so this is what I'm doing from here on out, My understanding of God is growing. It's changing. It's evolving. I find it a lot easier now to do the 10th step because this is kind of an oxymoron or whatever, but I don't like to make amends, so I try not to do things, to have to make amends like that. It doesn't happen. I always have to make amends, but the extreme of those is... it's way down. I haven't had to write out a serious amends to anybody with a sponsor. I go in for an annual with my sponsor, and we catch some stuff that I may have conveniently tucked away. My friend Jeremy, he brought me to this detox, and he's never given up on me. I kind of emulate that, right? When I try and work with somebody else, I've had some heartbreakers that I thought, these guys were doing really good, and you get really close with some of your sponsees, and you love them like family, and then, they have a slip-up, and you just like, oh, my God, it crushes you, But I just learned that I don't give up, you know. I keep trying to help out whatever way I can. I keep taking those calls in the middle of the night. If you're new, I heard you guys introduce yourselves as new. Keep coming back. If you didn't hear what you needed to hear from me or Lewis, you know, there's other meetings. There's meetings all over town. I've heard it. Don't leave before the miracle happens. I don't know what you need to hear, you know, on a personal level. But I hope you hear, you know, something that keeps you coming back to another meeting. I really do. For me, this has been life-changing. It's still changing. Sometimes, you know, at this point in my sobriety, I get into some serious discomfort. And, you know, all I can do really is thank God for God's grace and still some level of willingness to where I'm able to pick up a phone and call my sponsor or call another friend in this program and say, you know what, this is what's going on. What would you do? And I'm not the guy that calls around and goes, what would you do until I hear what I want to hear? You know, the guys that I run with, you know, that tight group of guys too, they'll tell me right away anyways. So it's usually not what I want to hear. And then, and I love that about them too, because they're telling me what I need to hear, you know, and, so keep coming back. It does work. And, you know, I wish you all many years of sobriety.